All right, we are live. John Dickinson and Matt Steinmetz, as I am in Boston, finals practice with the Warriors media availability coming up in about an hour or so, and then they'll be on the practice floor here at TD Garden in between Game 3 and Game 4 of the NBA Finals. And Steiny, Warriors now trailing in this series 2-1. The Celtics with a big first half and a big fourth quarter, enough to prevail and bother the Warriors enough in similar ways to the way they bothered them in Game 1 to be able to take advantage of really lack of defense from the Warriors, I think, first and foremost. But they have the lead, and now, you know, all eyes on Steph Curry and how limited or hobbled he will be, although some good reports this morning on the status of Steph coming off of last night, and Al Horford crashing into that left foot, which had been an issue from the injury against the Celtics back in March. So just kind of your headline thoughts on the Warriors being down in this series.
Well, let me ask you, because you talked about the good news. Last thing I heard was that he limped away from the podium, and it was 1 a.m. Boston time. What do you know already today that I might not know, or we might not know here on the West Coast?
Reports from Shams of The Athletic, no MRI, and optimism that Curry be good to go for Game 4. So I know there was some thought, you know, the next step, MRI, but look, it's the finals. I mean,
right.
You kind of telegraphed it last night based on the way he said he felt, not quite as bad as March, and it's the finals, and it's Steph Curry, and they're down 2-1, and he's really the only player that's played well in all three games for Golden State.
Yeah, and I don't – here's what I'm thinking. If it's the same injury as the Marcus Smart injury, but not as severe, well, I believe the Marcus Smart injury kept him out the last 11 games, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Or 13? Now, we talked during that period, JD, and we felt like they were purposely giving him the rest of the regular season, that he could have probably played a couple games late in that year. Well, now we're obviously at a far more important time. So if he can play, he's going to play. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's not 100%. By the way, he laid there on the ground, how long he laid there, the fact that he's limping. So, I mean, you know, the Warriors need him to be every bit healthy. But you asked about a headline. Man, you want to talk about 15 headlines I think you could put on a game. To me, the thing that I and maybe you know this off the top of your head, when's the last time the Warriors lost a game when Steph and Clay combined for 56 points on essentially 50% shooting from the floor and over 40% from three-point land? Now, I'm combining their numbers, but
sure,
it doesn't matter. Like, the Warriors, we've talked about this during the dynasty. They don't lose when two guys play well, usually. But they did last night, and that's got to be concerning if you're Steve Kerr.
No.
As great as we wanted him to be, but he was certainly pretty good, at least offensively. And they lost a game where Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were good. That doesn't happen a lot.
No, and I think it was sort of the game, at least for those two, that the Warriors have been waiting for. When's mm-hmm. Klay going to have that game? And we've talked a lot about, you know, will he be able to propel them to a win? Because his numbers would tell you since he's returned that he probably doesn't have four games in him.
Right.
Like last night. He might have last night plus one. And so there was a feeling for me that in those games where he did put up numbers, the Warriors would have to win those games with the way this series was rolling. But it also gets to, I think, the bigger picture, which is Steph's been really good in all three games. Now he's a little bit banged up, and the Warriors just haven't had enough from others on the offensive side, and whether that's, you know, Wiggins not making the three ball last night or Jordan Poole being really completely ineffective last night. I know he did have 10 points, but it was probably the quietest, most meaningless 10 points he scored this season. And then what the heck's going on with with Draymond Green right now in a number of different ways. We're talking about the offense, and I think we can start there because we'll get into the defense, but I still maintain, as much as the Celtics have locked the Warriors down in a couple of quarters, a couple of fourth quarters, 23-11 last night, I still think the biggest problem for the Warriors is they haven't been able to really defend in two of these three games. And the Celtics have had multiple players that have looked more comfortable and able to attack and be able to score.
No, you're absolutely right. I thought last night it felt like nobody could keep their man in front of them. And that goes for Wiggins, Clay, Steph, Draymond. Yeah. You know, I thought Wiggins got beat a bunch at the point of attack, which that hasn't been happening in the second half of the season. You know, the one thing, too, I got to point it out, is, yes, Steph and Clay combined for 56. But they had 2 points between them in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the fourth quarter numbers were not good. Curry had the turnovers.
Three turnovers in the fourth quarter. He was 1 for 4 from the field, and Clay was 0 for 3 from the field, all from three-point range. So, you know, and I know so much of this finals is about Steph Curry and does he deserve more credit. You know, Steph Curry is a great, great player, and I'm not making any sweeping statements, but last night, he and Clay have to do something in the fourth quarter, and they didn't. Yeah. So how can you win a game on the road that you go into the fourth quarter down a bucket or two maybe, and have your two best players go AWOL? You're not going to win that game.
Well, and how often do you see the Warriors have a big third quarter like that where they're coming? And it really did feel to me, and I thought for as electric as the crowd was in Boston, and it was I think as good as any in the finals in these last 7 years, but they got a little tight when the Warriors were hitting some threes there and coming back, and it felt like the Celtics couldn't totally shake them, and then they took the lead. Like they were their intelligent group, and kind of I think felt a little bit of what was coming, and that the Celtics were in a danger zone. But I think it took so much out of the Warriors to come back that once they got the lead, there was still enough time left in the game. It's one thing if you go on that run and it's the middle of the fourth quarter, there's about 8 minutes left and you fall behind. Teams can get up really tight. I felt like there was enough time left in the game to where the Celtics could regroup. And they basically did exactly what they did in game one. They regrouped after a bad third quarter where the Warriors dominated them. And kind of turn the faucet off on the Warriors.
I mean, one of the things about the finals and the playoffs that I always find just it's like the best part is unless you win the title, something gets exposed. So you have a lot of good playoff teams, but something gets exposed. But for one of the teams, and JD, I'm looking at that Warrior game last night. And we talk about this a lot. You know, you watch the Warriors for 5 or 6 years. I've said this. The game clock is too long for the opponent. Like, the game's too long to beat the Warriors because the Warriors, you're an inferior opponent to the Warriors. But now last night I'm watching this game, and I'm looking at it from the Celtics' perspective, and I'm like, well, if you're the Celtics, you handle them in the first half, the Warriors. Then the Warriors had their run, but you're right, there was still a fourth quarter. And even though, you know, I'm not saying the Celtics didn't get tight or conscientious, but I think they thought they whether they're right or wrong, it doesn't matter. They know they're the better team. So I think they were like, okay, we just took one on the chin, and now we go back to what we're doing, which is kind of fundamentally the way they defended to start the game. And they finished the game like that. Here's the other thing that I think is becoming apparent. The Draymond Green playing 4-on-5 offensively is a big problem. And then I hear things like, how come Looney played only 17 minutes? Fair. It's fair.
Yeah, it is
but
fair.
The reason is because I don't think Kerr thinks he can play Looney and Draymond together. Like, the two non-score and Gary Payton the second.
Payton's in there too, and Iguodala either didn't have anything to give, or they couldn't throw him into that mix either.
Exactly, and so that's a big part of what's slowing down Jordan Poole is there's just too much traffic, and he's not strong enough yet. And even Wiggins, I feel like when he drives into the lane, there's a crowd in there a little bit. And I just think the Warriors are just having too much trouble because they have too many guys offensively who aren't being guarded.
Well, and look, on top of all of that, I mean, the Celtics are flying around. I mean, Robert Williams is like a hockey goalie. I mean, he's just
pretty amazing.
He's coming out of nowhere on a couple of plays where you're thinking, okay, that's going to be a layup or that's going to be a floater, and here's Robert Williams throwing it out of bounds or knocking it to one of his teammates. I mean, he was bouncy and spry, and you know, he's looked really good at times. I think he's looked a little banged up at times, but last night, I mean, he was everywhere. The Celtics were everywhere in terms of just blocking shots, and you always talk about this, and it's true. Sometimes a team blocking shots, it leads to just being a little tentative even when they're not blocking shots. And I think that's been in play somewhat in this series for the Warriors.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I after game two, I think we did a podcast and I said to you, man, I'm worried about Boston being able to score after Tatum and Brown, you know.
Well, shouldn't the Warriors have more options? Like, well, they can come through, but right, it looks like the Celtics do
this.
Right now.
Get this. So I got a buddy who's a Celtics fan, and he says, why don't you ask Warrior fans today on the radio who Draymond Green can guard on the Celtics? And, you know, obviously it's a tweak or whatever. You know, he's a Celtic fan. But if you do look at it closely, there isn't a matchup here that he's ever going to feel like I own this one. And he goes into every series knowing he can own a matchup. Well, Robert Williams, for one game anyway, made him look old and unathletic. Jaylen Brown, they clearly said if Draymond's going to match up with Jaylen Brown, we're going to make him play in space out on the perimeter. And then yeah, Brown's strong enough to take that first bump. Tatum, I don't know that Draymond can guard Tatum. So now, you know, you see that Boston's just a little different than other teams the Warriors have played.
No, they really are. And, yeah, I think the adjustment on the Celtics side, you nailed as far as Jaylen Brown. I mean, he was pretty good early in game two. As the game went on, I thought he got a little sloppy. He got, you know, just not picking the right times to go. They really, I think, between game two and game three on the Celtics side, made a point to, this is what we're going to do to get Jaylen Brown into a free open attack mode, and you got to go. And he just right, was relentless, I thought, yeah, last night in attacking Draymond and kind of exposing that matchup. And then, you know, the other part, just for the Warriors defense, I mean, they go zone and the
wow,
Celtics, it's like hit the middle and throw it over the top. And it's layup city. I mean,
when they went zone the first time, the Celtics threw it into the middle. It was wide open. I can't remember if it was Horford. And he's wide open in the middle.
He's perfect for that. He's perfect for that.
He throws it out. And I'm like, man, he had a layup. And then yeah, they just threw it right back to him. And then he got the light. Like,
yeah,
they look like, go ahead and play zone now. Like, that was troubling. Like, they were begging the Warriors to try to play zone, I thought.
Yeah, and part of that's, I think, the foul trouble. Part of that
yeah,
is some bad matchups, too. I think they try to protect Poole. I thought, you know, Curry praised for his defense, and rightfully so in game two. The foul trouble, I think, really impacted his ability to be aggressive because he had to stay on the floor. And he picked up a couple of careless fouls, I thought, last
yeah,
night, too.
The one on Smart was a bad one on the three-point shot. You know, here's the other thing I was thinking about. You know, if we're going to talk about the three best players on each team, you know, 5 years ago when the Warriors were at their height, those three guys were very good defensively. Draymond was absolutely incredible. Klay was well above average, and Steph Curry was average. But the Celtics' three best players are outplaying the Warriors' three best players on the defensive end big time. Big time. Draymond has not been a defensive presence. Curry, to me, Curry's had some nice plays and some nice moments, but I don't think he's been great for 38 minutes, three nights in a row or three games in a row. And Klay has been meh defensively. And like, this is the yeah, thing about Marcus Smart. Steph scored 31 points, but the guy's relentless. Like, you know, yeah, they gave up a couple open ones, and you always say, how can that happen? Well, it happens because it's basketball. But those three guys, Tatum too. Tatum defends. He defends. So they've been better all around than the Warriors' best three players.
So as far as adjustments go, as we look from game three to game four, and we should point out, I mean, you know, one completed comeback,
no doubt.
One clunker maybe by the Celtics, who have been prone to clunker quarters and halves, even in this building in the playoffs. And it's 2-2, and the Warriors are feeling like they're in control going back to San Francisco, and they have home court advantage, and it would set up an unbelievable scene for game five. But they now are vulnerable. You know, it's the whole, you're one game away from being one game away.
Right.
You're one game away from having to play in this building in an elimination game if you can't win tomorrow. Like, that immediately would be on the table. Forget about game five back in the Bay if you go down 3-1. So what now can the Warriors do? They were already reliant on Curry. Now he's a little banged up. Klay had a good game, or at least a better game, and they didn't win. And Wiggins and Poole are not doing enough. I mean, is it more Porter? Is it more Payton? Is it? I mean, I'm hearing people talking about, do you go to Moody and Kuminga? Do you get deeper on the bench? Like, what's the one thing you try to do if you're Steve Kerr tomorrow? Because it's more than just be more forceful at this point when you're talking about back-to-back on the road.
Well, to me, one of the answers is Porter, but I don't think they can use him as much as they want. Like, I think if Kerr had his way, I think Porter would play 25 minutes a game, 20-25, but I don't think he can give it to you.
The defense, or just physically, he's not there?
Just, yes, physically. And I also think, you know, he can play four in a small lineup, but then who's he going to guard if he's got to guard a Tatum or a Brown or even a Robert Williams? Because now Williams is bigger and more athletic inside. I mean, look, it's the easiest thing we've talked about. Kuminga. But look, they have an athleticism deficiency, I think we can all acknowledge in this series. Not one player is going to turn around this series. But you know what? If he wants to put Kuminga in there for six, 8 minutes in the first half on Friday, I would understand it. The only issue I have with that is you kind of have sent him a message the entire playoffs that he wasn't quite good enough. And now when your backs are really against the wall, you're going to put the kid in and say, see if you can make something happen. Would have been a lot better and easier if he would have been getting some minutes here and there throughout the postseason.
Well, and let's just be real about it. He's only played some in the Memphis series because the Warriors were hobbled. Okay, they were banged up. Iguodala was out, Payton was out, and Porter was out. And so he got minutes at that point in that series because all three of them were out. The only other times he's played in any of the other two series were when the Warriors were up 3-0 on the road, and then Steve Kerr got him some run against Denver, and then they were up 3-0 on the road and down 29 in game four at Dallas, and that was when he got the opportunity with some others to get out there and play. So just to your point on they haven't totally trusted him or wanted to put him in that position where, you know, they did it by necessity due to injury and rotation against Memphis, but that's been about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, like, we always have to be careful of overstating one game of a seven game series, though it's one game and it's a quarter, you know, it's 25% of winning a title. And I always say how it ends is very important. And to me, it looked like this could possibly be the start of just the Warriors wearing down. Like, they, you know what I mean? They're just out of gas. The one thing I thought is some people were critical of Kerr taking Steph Curry out at the end of the third quarter when he got him out. I get that, JD, but how do you explain then his bad fourth quarter?
Well, is he just going to play the whole half with four fouls?
Exactly.
I mean, is that the solution?
It might have to be, but what I'm saying is if you want him to play the whole second half, Well, I'm just telling you right now, his fourth quarter was not very good at all. So how's it going to be better if he's more fatigued in the fourth quarter of a game?
No, I think you're onto something there. And I think Steve Kerr got caught because they were he had the four fouls. They were coming back. He wanted to play him the whole fourth quarter, but playing the whole fourth quarter meant he had to sit at some point. And
right.
So he gets taken out when they're hot. But I think Kerr thought, I'm going to get him out. We're hanging in this thing. It's not going to go awry. And in essence, he threw a bucket of cold water on him, really, because he took him out and then he came back and he just wasn't the same. So I think even
right.
that's also a fair assumption. But I think the foul trouble was also part of it. If he had had two fouls, I think maybe he would have just rode it through and maybe the Warriors get a lead going into the fourth quarter. And then you pull him for a couple of minutes at the top of the fourth quarter. But I it's going to be harder to play him the whole second half now with the injury, too. Like, that's
going to happen. Well, and how about this? How about this, too, JD? This is the only time in the series where they only have one day off.
Right.
So you play him 45, 46 minutes last night. You know, now that's a very real thing, trying to come back with 45 minutes on one day of rest, not two, one. So it's not as easy as, well, just keep playing Steph. Now we're getting to desperation time where that's what you may have to do. I feel like there's a difference. Like, I know it's the finals and everybody, every game is monumental, but because the Warriors have been here five times, you know, now I feel like they're looking at each other saying everything's on the table. Not after one loss, but now after two losses. They still got to get beat twice. And whether Warrior fans like it or not, that's still wiggle room for a champion. And you know, and now, you know, again, I do think everything's on the table. No doubt about it.
So, all right, let's talk about Draymond. When he's played well and he was on one in game two, the Warriors have won and his imprint was all over the win. But whether it was letting Horford get off in game one or whether it was just kind of an overall blah performance last night in game three, he's been the measuring stick really for the Warriors in a lot of ways for this series to this point. He addressed on his own podcast the fact that he got caught up in maybe some of the stuff with Cornbread Maxwell and the fans and the chatter about the way that he played in game two. He also called himself soft last night, which I thought was interesting, and he's got to come out and just be him again. So are we going to see the game two Draymond? And just also, what do you make of him just
I don't know.
Kind of coming out and acknowledging that he got too caught up? Like, that's
–
does he not want to give the Celtics credit? Or, like, what?
I don't know. I do think it's interesting because the one thing about Draymond that I thought is under no circumstances ever, 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 ever will he or does he give in? Ever.
Right.
And he basically acknowledged that he gave in. And so it's almost not even basketball related. It's almost like he thought, you know what? I am being a jerk. Or you know what I mean? Or you know what? Maybe I am a little out of like, and I think it crept in just a little bit.
Maybe do you think Isaiah Thomas, what Isaiah Thomas had to say
about the podcast?
Played a role in all of that. That, hey, you're not talking about the players. You're talking about Cedric Maxwell. And you're talking about everything else. And look, Isaiah Thomas is, I mean, you know,
he's pretty milk toast in terms of criticism.
Typically, and I also think you know, this is you know, Draymond's a Michigan guy, right? And Isaiah Thomas is like, I don't know. I just wonder. Like, I mean, this is a Hall of Fame freaking player saying this. So I think maybe it hits a little different when it's coming from somebody with the gravitas that Isaiah Thomas has in the game.
It's true.
It's not like me and you are saying it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, this is somebody
right.
that's respected for what he did in the game in a big time way.
Well, and I think there's two different things. The podcast don't bother me after a game. What's said, what he's been saying is really the issue and what he's getting caught up in.
Isaiah Thomas said, yeah.
Exactly. So, look, until Draymond plays a good game, people are going to say that. And he's got to show now that that's not the case. You know, I do think last night what happened is he probably came out to the game thinking, I'm not going to do anything early to have anybody point the finger at. Like, he wasn't going to have a moment early in the game where he did something and then they excessively penalized him. And so he could run around the court clapping and smiling and saying, oh, yeah, I knew it was coming. So what happens is he plays for 5 or 6 minutes and it's just a regular game. And that whole issue goes away. But now that's like all he had going into the game. So he was just playing last night. He wasn't really playing like he should have been playing because he was aware that he might be looked at with more scrutiny. Like he fell into his own trap a little bit.
And that's basically what he said that he did. And so expect something different, I guess.
Sure.
Expect
no doubt.
More a game two. I mean, just
definitely
just be on one and own it.
I think that's. I mean, what's the alternative?
Well, like you said, everything's on the table at this point.
Right.
When you're down 2-1, what did you think? Also, I had this jotted down. Just some of the comments. I mean, I don't think I wasn't expecting F you Draymond, like and a lot of that from the crowd here. Maybe I should have been, but what did you think of how the Warriors reacted? Because I thought the Warriors they spoke to that in a way that kind of, you know, you can say it's classless or whatever,
right?
But I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, they took a couple shots. Like you had to kind of know that was coming.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Boston fans aren't any different than Warrior fans. They're no different. I'm sorry. You know, and if Draymond Green in Memphis wants to walk off the court and give the middle finger to the entire crowd, then he's going to hear it from the entire crowd. And if
Draymond's wife would disagree with you, by the way, because she said Warrior fans would never.
Warrior fans were chanting something about Barkley, too, not even in the arena. So I disagree with that. I think all fans are essentially the same. I think Warrior fans would, you know, do something similar if there were a reason to do something similar. But Boston fans are, you know, they're kind of known for that, to tell you the truth.
They are. And
I didn't think it was. Yeah, it's a classless cheer. There's no doubt about that.
Sure. But I think it happened quite a few times during the game.
You know, I think ref you suck is stupid and classless too. So I get it. The F word is far more profane. But I don't think it was anything the Warriors shouldn't have expected.
Well, and the one thing you know now is, all right, you're down 2-1. You're playing in this building again tomorrow night. If you think – yeah, to me, if you think last night was something, I mean, what's it going to be like tomorrow night?
Yeah. And
especially tomorrow night after you've acknowledged. I mean, for me, it's a little bit like, and we should put this one to bed. We talked about the Celtics off of, you know, the way they talked about the officiating in game two. Well, they came out and put that to bed, and they had to check that box, but they did check that box. You know, Warriors. I kind of put it a little bit in that category. It's like, you know what? I don't know. They got asked about it, so they're going to give an answer. But,
sure.
But, you know, I don't know. Don't, you know, I didn't really love that they got so caught up in it, to be honest.
Right.
I don't think they got caught up in it during the game, but after.
No. And that's probably, you know, and a lot of that has to do with probably coming up after a tough loss. Here's the one thing I'm worried about with the Celtics, believe it or not. Yes, they're up 2-1, but what that win does last night for Boston is it ensures they're coming back for a game six.
Sure.
Unless they run the table. So
yeah, their worst case is they get that game.
That's the worst part. That's the part that I think makes them a little bit vulnerable because
they can exhale a little bit.
Yes. Or they might exhale a little bit. Whereas
And they have done that in the playoffs. Yes,
but I also think if they got any common sense, they got to know that this is the time to try to pounce. They have to know that. And, you know, I mean, if I'm Boston, I'm almost thinking, can we run them out of the building Friday? And I know Warrior fans would be like, what are you kidding? But that's got to be their mentality, I think, on Friday.
Well, especially with a hobbled Steph Curry, yeah, and the Warriors with so many question marks, really, on both
they
sides.
Went to, the they went at Steph Curry last night before he got hurt.
Right, yeah.
I thought they put him in some tough positions. They're going to even do that more tomorrow night.
No, definitely. Matt, great stuff. I know you got the show with Guru coming up here, so we'll let you get ready for that. And I'm going to head over to the Celtics and Warriors media availabilities here at TD Garden, and we'll reconvene. I know I'm in for you tomorrow, so looking forward to that. And we'll talk again after game 4.
Yes, sir.